Well, shalom, y'all. We are so glad you have joined us for this week's teaching. We're going to be on part four of Israel and Egypt. And this week, we're going to be going through a story here that actually is talking about the time of Israel leaving out of Egypt. Where we're going to be starting off in this story is this is after the night of the Passover, and Israel has left Egypt, and they have gone through the wilderness, and they have approached and came to the Red Sea. So we're going to read here in Exodus chapter 14 and verse 10. Now Pharaoh drew near, and the sons of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them. And they became very afraid, so the sons of Israel cried out to Yahweh. Then they said to Moses, "Is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What is this you have done against us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, 'Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians'? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than for us to die in the wilderness." So Israel has come out of the land of Egypt, and they are at the Red Sea, and Pharaoh is pursuing after them. He has now changed his mind regarding telling Moses to let Israel go. And remember, Israel at one point, and we had talked about this earlier in this series, Israel cried out in their affliction because of the slavery and the hard labor that they were under in serving the Egyptians. And they had been put in that role in doing that because the Pharaoh of Egypt had become afraid of them because they had become such a strong and mighty nation there in Egypt and was afraid that they would overtake them. So God hears their cry in Egypt, and he answers their cry. And in the midst of their affliction, we've talked about how they became even stronger during this affliction. We see how Moses was born during the affliction, and Moses is the one who leads them out of Egypt. As we see here in this story, Israel is looking to Moses like, "Why have you brought us out of Egypt?" So he was born during the affliction. And so Moses comes along, and he is sent by God because he hears the cry of Israel. And so he comes to their aid to deliver them out of the land of Egypt, remembering the covenant that he had with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so now Israel is standing at the Red Sea, and they are in fear for their lives because Pharaoh is pursuing them. And at this moment, Israel's response because of their fear to Moses is, "We told you to let us stay in Egypt." So their desire upon seeing this hurdle that is in front of them is to return where they came from. They want to go back to Egypt. Now they want to go back to serving the Egyptians. They have forgotten about how hard it was and about how they cried out for help while serving the Egyptians. So they're longing to go back to that where they were, to that which they were comfortable with. They had become comfortable with serving the Egyptians. And so the fear of what was ahead of them is causing them to want to turn back, to go to what they had been delivered from. And so we have to be careful of that as well. Just as he delivered Israel from Egypt under the bondage of the slavery of serving Egypt, that is a typology of what he has done for us. Just as he redeemed Israel from Egypt, he has redeemed us from Egypt. The slavery that they were under in Egypt speaks of the slavery that we were under in sin. And so we have to be careful not to fall into the same trap as Israel did and want to turn back to sin, to turn back from where we came from, to turn back from what he has redeemed us from. He redeemed Israel from Egypt because they were his chosen people, and he was pulling them out of Egypt to be their God, for them to live with him and to dwell with him and to worship him. So he was pulling them out for a reason and for a purpose. And they see a hurdle or an obstacle in front of them, and their response to that hurdle was not to look and believe that the same God who just pulled them out of Egypt could deliver them again in this situation, but was to turn back and go where they came from. So we have to be careful not to turn back to where we came from and to go back to that life of sin and what we were doing before, because sometimes that can feel more comfortable than the journey that we're on as we're walking with him and as we're being transformed into the image of Yeshua, because that is the journey and the walk that we are on. As he is leading them through the wilderness, he is going through the process of showing himself to them. And he is going to lay out, you know, his covenant to them. And he brings them on the long journey to get them ready to enter into the land that was promised unto them. And he does the same with us. He brings us on a journey in order to prepare us for where he is bringing us so we can enter into that promised land, into the place that he has prepared for us. And on that journey, it is a process of learning, and it is a process of being refined. It is a process in which we will go through testing and trials. They were tested and tried in the wilderness, and we will be tested and we will be tried and we will be refined as we go along our journey. And that is for the purpose of sanctification, of becoming more like Yeshua and less like the world, less like what we were pulled out of. But sometimes as we go through that process, we will find ourselves at moments where it looks like we're standing at the edge of the Red Sea. And we have to make that choice of how we are going to respond when we are standing at the edge of the Red Sea. Are we going to have the response that Israel has here, where their response was, well, let's just turn back and go back to Egypt. Why did we ever leave Egypt? Their thoughts are, is that they're going to die right there in the wilderness. Could we not have been buried in Egypt? Why do we come to the wilderness to die? So we see that they're not acting and responding in faith or in trust in the one who has already pulled them out of Egypt, and that the one who has pulled them out is going to continue to pull them out and is going to continue to lead and guide them. And up until this point, as they came out of Egypt, they were being led by a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. And so God is with them and he is leading them, and they're seeing this occur. But when this hardship comes up, they lose faith. How do we respond when the hardship is in front of us? Do we lose faith, or do we stand strong and believe that he is going to deliver us? Now let's look at verse 13. But Moses said to the people, "Do not fear. Stand by and see the salvation of Yahweh, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians, whom you have seen today, you will never see them again forever. Yahweh will fight for you, and you will keep silent. So the people cry out, why did you bring us here to die? Moses responds with, do not fear. So the first statement to them is, do not fear. What you see right now, be still. See that the salvation is of Yahweh, the same God, Yahweh, who brought you out of Egypt. Just stand here. You do not have to do anything. Just stand here and see the salvation of Yahweh. Or be still and be quiet, right? So we have to be careful because Israel becomes fearful. And then they begin to speak out of their fear. And we need to be careful when we are experiencing fear. And we need to be able to guard what we say. Because we want to be careful that we don't speak things out of fear instead out of faith. And Moses says, just stand here. Yahweh's salvation, God's salvation of them and how he was going to deliver them did not require them to do anything. It just required them to stand there and not go back to Egypt. It's the same with us as we are facing obstacles and hurdles as we are walking along and we are progressing to the place that he is bringing us, to the holy place that he is bringing us. Sometimes we're going to find ourselves in the spot where we're just going to have to tell ourselves, do not fear. Stand by. There are times where it's not upon us to do anything. He is there to bring the salvation. He is there to bring the deliverance, to bring the answer to the prayer. It's just a matter of us not being fearful and not trying to control how it happens or occurs. Sometimes it's just a matter of us stepping back and trusting him and believing in him and watching him do his thing. And then Moses tells them, you will not see the Egyptians ever again. Now, of course, we know that as they go across the Red Sea, God tells Moses to raise his staff up in the air, and he raises his staff in the air, and the waters part. And Israel walks through the Red Sea, which is divided on dry ground. And as they get to the other side, they stand there, and then the waters go back as the Egyptians are pursuing them, and they drown. And they see the bodies of the Egyptians washed up on the beach there. So they see this fulfilled as they cross the Red Sea. The Egyptians no longer were pursuing after them. They had been delivered from Egypt. But it's interesting because this isn't the only time that Israel actually looks to Moses and makes comment about wanting to go back unto Egypt. And even while in Egypt, as Moses was going before Pharaoh, you know, and Pharaoh's initial response to Moses asking him to let the people go was not favorable, but his response was to increase the workload on Israel. And Israel's response unto Moses was, you know, basically, leave us alone, stop going before him, because you have made things worse. But God, in his mercy, was still moving, still directing Moses, and still drew Israel out of Egypt. And so it speaks unto us how their heart on numerous occasions would turn back and think about how it was better in Egypt than it was in the wilderness. And we have to be careful of that as well, of being drawn back to where we were before we were redeemed and thinking that it was better back then than it is now. Israel had forgotten how bitter it was being underneath the slavery of Egypt because of the fear they were experiencing at the Red Sea and because of later testing and trials that they would go through in the wilderness. I want to talk about this concept of Moses looking at them and saying, do not fear. Let's look at Psalms chapter 27 and verse 1 of David. Yahweh is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Yahweh is a strong defense of my life. Whom shall I dread? When evildoers come upon me to devour my flesh, my adversaries and my enemies, they stumbled and fell. Though a host encamp against me, my heart will not fear. Though war arise against me, in this I trust. So here is David saying, Yahweh is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? That is his instruction unto us. Whom shall we fear? Who is there to fear? Israel had no need to fear Egypt. And we have no need to fear anything. Because Yahweh is the strong defense of our life. Yahweh was the strong defense of Israel. And how he stood in defense of Israel is how he stands in defense for us. How he protected them, how he redeemed them, how he delivered them, even when they were not doing things perfectly, even when their responses at times were amiss and were not something that would be pleasing unto him, in his mercy and in his grace, he was still there as a strong defense unto them. So he is our light. He is our salvation. He is the one who is bringing us deliverance. He is the one who is defending us, who is protecting us, who is delivering us. So we can stand each and every day and say, whom shall I fear? So when fear comes our way, we can simply speak unto our soul. And that's one of the things that David did so well, was he spoke unto his soul. Whom shall I fear? So we tell ourselves, whom shall I fear? Yahweh is the strong defense. He is my strong defense. So even though the enemy may try to come and devour me, I shall not fear. In verse 2, when evildoers come upon me to devour my flesh, my enemies, my adversaries, and my enemies, they stumbled and fell. So those who came against me, they were the ones who fell. I was not the one who fell. That's what David is saying. And we can be just as David when we put our trust in him and we do not fear and we believe that he is there for us. We will see that it is our adversaries and our enemies who will stumble and fall. And that's what Israel saw at the Red Sea, is they saw their adversary, they saw their enemy stumble and fall. They were not overtaken by their enemy because Yahweh was the strong defense of their lives. So they had no need to fear. And we have no need to fear because our enemies will be the ones who stumble and fall, not us. In verse 3, though a host encamp against me, my heart will not fear. Though war arise against me, in this I trust. So here David is saying, a host, an army, can encamp against me, but my heart will not fear. Though war may rise against me, though there's this army camped against me, and though they may enter into war against me, and what I will trust is that Yahweh is my strong defense, that my adversary, my enemy, will be the one who will stumble and fall, not me. I will stand victorious because I trust in Yahweh, who is my light and my salvation. And that's what God was showing unto Israel, is that he was their light and their salvation. Let's look at Psalms 91 and verse 2. I will say to Yahweh, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. For it is he who delivers me from the snare of the trapper and from the destructive pestilence. He will cover you with his pinions, and under his wings you shall take refuge. His truth is a large shield and bulwark. So Yahweh is our refuge and our fortress. This is what he was showing unto Israel in the wilderness, is that he was their refuge. He was their fortress. So when you think, what is a fortress? What is this refuge? He's speaking normally, a fortress would be built behind a stone wall up on top of a mountain, making it very difficult for an enemy to overtake. It was a strong defense place, a very strong place of defense. And so this is what Yahweh is for us. He is that place that provides that strong wall of defense, that when there is danger, we take refuge in. You would take refuge behind the stone walls of the fortress. And so it is in God whom we trust. When we put our trust in him, we are spiritually taking refuge behind the stone wall, or this fortress wall of God. And he delivers us from that which would seek to destroy us, that which would seek to try to entrap us. And he takes us and he puts us under his wing. And he is a shield unto us, meaning that anything that the evil one tries to throw our way to harm us, to destroy us, will not find its way unto us when we trust in him. Because when we trust in him, we place ourselves behind his large shield. We take refuge behind his shield. He covers us with his wings. So he protects us. He was protecting Israel in the wilderness when he delivers them from Egypt, and he is going to protect them throughout the wilderness as long as they are walking with him. There were times that they saw some destruction, but that destruction was because of their rebellious heart, because they chose not to trust in him, but yet sought to do their own thing. They sought the pleasures of Egypt. So when we get caught up like Israel did, and we seek that which we came from, and we stop trusting in him and walking with him, we can fall into that same trap as Israel, and he brings his discipline. But as we walk in covenant with him, and we walk in covenant with him by walking in obedience to the instructions that he has given us in the Torah, how he laid out how he wants us to live righteously before him. And when we do that, he fulfills his end of the covenant, and that is to be our God, who delivers us, who protects us, who we can take refuge in. But if we're going to try to take refuge, if we're going to try and think that we're going to have protection when we don't trust and we're walking in fear, and our heart draws us back to Egypt, and we go back to Egypt, then we pull ourselves out from behind his large shield. We pull ourselves out from underneath his wings. So we need to learn from Israel not to be like them, not to desire to go back unto Egypt, but to look and seek to go forward to the promised land, to the holy land that he is bringing us, and to trust in him along that journey. It doesn't mean we have to be perfect as we're going down this journey. We will make mistakes, but we should have a desire to walk in that which is perfect. We should have a desire to do that which is pleasing unto him. Now let's look at Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 28. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The everlasting God Yahweh, the creator of the ends of the earth, does not become weary or tired. His understanding is unsearchable. So think about this. The God in whom delivered Israel, the one who is our shield, who is our fortress, who we take refuge in, does not become weary or tired. He does not grow tired delivering us. He does not grow tired protecting us and keeping us safe. He does not ever become tired. We are taking refuge in a God, in the everlasting God, Yahweh, who never grows tired. Unlike an army of men fighting for their country or their people or their tribe or their nation, they will grow tired. God, Yahweh, does not. Verse 29, he gives power to the weary, and to him who lacks vigor, he increases might. So he does not grow weary, and he also gives power to those who have grown tired. So if you have grown tired, you just got to look unto him. You just got to seek him. Reach out to him, because he gives power to those who are tired. He gives might. He gives strength unto those who have become weak. He is our source. Instead of trying to fight on our own and trying to increase the might on our own, if we just sit back, as Moses told Israel, stand still and trust. So stand still and trust. He will give you power. He will increase your might. Now verse 30. Though youths grow weary and tired, and choice young men stumble badly, yet those who hope in Yahweh will gain new power. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. So even young people grow tired and will stumble. But those who hope and Yahweh, those who put their trust in him, those who are willing to stand and tie themselves with Yahweh, to bind themselves with Him, they will gain a new power. So if you have become tired, if you lack strength, what do? Hope in Yahweh. Bind yourself together with Him, and you will gain new power. You will mount up with wings like eagles. So you will soar. You will run and not grow tired. They will walk and not become weary. Now, the idea of mounting up with wings like eagles, soaring, this is one of the ways that Yahweh describes how He pulled Israel out of Egypt. Let's look at Exodus chapter 19 and verse 4. You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I lifted you up on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. So that is what He did. He mounted them up on eagle's wings and He brought them to Himself. So to those who will trust in God, those who will put their hope in Him, they will mount up with wings as eagles, or you could say He will lift you up on eagle's wings. The eagles fly high above the turbulent winds. When it is turbulent, the higher they soar, the higher they fly in the air. So it is speaking unto us, if the winds are unstable in your life, if it is tough, if it is hard, if you put your trust in Him, if you put your hope in Him, you will fly high above it. When the high winds, the trouble comes, you will just go even higher. That is His message unto us. That is what He is telling us. You will just go higher. Exodus chapter 14 and verse 19. Then the angel of God, who had been going before the camp of Israel, moved and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them. So it came between the camp of Egypt and the camp of Israel. And there was the cloud along with the darkness. Yet it gave light at night. Thus the one did not come near the other all night. Now it's interesting here. You kind of first read through the story, you think, you know, here's Israel standing at the Red Sea. They see the Egyptians coming. They become fearful, and God tells Moses to raise his staff, and the water splits, and they go through. And you kind of almost think that it's all happening at that one moment in time. But we can see here in verse 20, that doesn't appear to be the way it occurs. That the Egyptians come upon Israel at the sea. And then this cloud and this fire moves between the two camps. So He brings a separation between the two before He splits the Red Sea. He prevents Egypt from even being able to approach Israel. And then as the Red Sea is split, Israel is able to walk through the Red Sea. Remember, they are walking. The Egyptians are on horses and chariots, so they are able to move at a much faster pace. So had the sea just been split open, Egypt still could have overtaken Israel. But by putting the cloud and the fire between the two camps. He becomes that fortress for Israel. He is a wall that Egypt cannot penetrate. It's not a physical wall, but it is a spiritual wall that is there that they cannot penetrate until Israel is able to safely cross the Red Sea. Then once they get across the Red Sea, the fire and the cloud move and are no longer separating the two armies. And now Egypt comes through and then they're drowned in the sea. So we see how God delivers Israel, how he was that fortress unto them. And that is the same with us. He is that spiritual wall. Just as that cloud and that fire was between Israel and Egypt, his cloud and his fire, his presence, his spiritual fortress is between us and our adversaries. Let's look at Exodus chapter 15 and verse 1. Then Moses and the sons of Israel sang this song to Yahweh and said, I will sing to Yahweh, for he is highly exalted, the horse and its rider he has hurled into the sea. Yah is my strength and my song, and he has become my salvation. This is my God, and I will praise him, my father's God, and I will extol him. So this is the beginning of the song of Moses, which we will all sing. One day we will all sing the song of Moses and the song of the Lamb. And that is that the horse and the rider was hurled into the sea, speaking of how Israel saw their enemy fall before their eyes. Yah is my strength. He is the one I will sing of. He has become my salvation. He is our strength. He is our song. And he is our salvation. So therefore, we should praise him and we should extol him. Now let's look at verse 13. In your loving kindness, you have guided the people whom you have redeemed. In your strength, you have led them to your holy habitation. And that is what our God is doing for us. In his loving kindness, he is guiding us, his people, whom he has redeemed by the Passover lamb, by the blood of Yeshua. He is guiding us in his strength, not by our strength, not by our might, but by his strength. He is leading us to his holy habitation. In fact, he has led us to his holy habitation. But he is leading us to the promised land, to the place where we will dwell with him forever. He has redeemed us to bring us into his holy habitation, into his set apart relationship with him. And that's what we have as those who have been redeemed. We have habitation with him. He dwells with us. He lives with us. His spirit lives inside of us. His holy habitation, meaning it is set apart, which is why he has given us his Torah. He's instructing us on how to live in his set apart habitation, because he is set apart and he will not inhabit that which is not set apart. Well, hallelujah. We're so glad you have joined us for this week's teaching. We will be back again next week with another teaching. So come back now and shalom, y'all.
Scripture quotations taken from LSB, Legacy Standard Bible, copyright 2021 by the Lockman Foundation, used by permission, all rights reserved, managed in partnership with 316 Publishing Incorporated, lsbible.org, and 316publishing.com.